Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on podcasthealth.com or iHeart or wherever you download us from. Thank you for doing that. This is 1258B. The Bs are always great guests, and we have one for you today. Dr. Regina Zappi is an audiologist, associate director of the audiology practices at the American Speech Language Hearing Association, where she leads pediatric audiology, that's hearing, initiatives. She received her Doctor of Audiology from the University of Washington and completed her externship across the country. So she went the full way from the state of Washington to Boston Children's to do that. And so Boston Children's is the second best pediatric hospital in the country. We always think of Children's Hospital Philadelphia as number one only because that's where my son is. So since he is a physician there, I'm just giving Dr. Zappi a little joke on that. But we are today sponsored as usual by LifeFirstNaturals.com, the makers of Bovine Colostrum, Truebiotics, and Dye Rescue, as well as by 4Youngevity.com. 4Youngevity.com. Go to their websites, 4Youngevity.com, sign up for the free newsletter, and go to LifeFirstNaturals.com to find out the randomized double-blind studies that have been done with Truebiotics and Bovine Colostrum. Dr. Zappi, I should tell you that I have a vested interest in childhood audiology, as my wife, with a lot of lobbying help from her group, as well as some direct, if you will, contributions to lawmakers, did get, as is custom in Illinois, did get mandatory newborn. It's funny, you have to donate money for something that's a public health good, but she did get newborn screening for hearing screening mandated in the state of Illinois as a law, not just a regulation. So it will be tough for that to be overturned, but as you know, I think it is still done in Illinois. Where are you physically located now, Dr. Zappi?
Yes, so I am in Rockville, Maryland, and this is also where the American Speech Language Hearing Association headquarters is.
And it's also near where the Department of Energy is, where my daughter works. So I'm very familiar, as well as where the FDA is. So tell us about the rationale for newborn screening of hearing. Why do I care about it? Why does my wife care about it? And why does the American Speech Language Hearing Association, where you lead the pediatric hearing initiatives, care about it?
Absolutely. That is a great question. So there are many reasons why newborn hearing screening is important, which I know that you know personally as well with your wife's work. I will tell you the top two. So the first reason I can tell you is that hearing loss in infancy is really difficult to detect. So even the most attentive, well-educated parents can possibly miss hearing loss. So hearing loss is an invisible diagnosis. So prior to universal newborn hearing screening, which we are very privileged to have now, a lot of the kiddos that were diagnosed with hearing loss, that did not happen until they were around preschool or kindergarten age. By that time, the language learning window had closed or was nearly closing. So newborn hearing screening that we do have now, we're able to detect it when the baby is very young. And another reason, too, that it's so important is because research has shown us that if the baby is diagnosed early and receives early intervention, by the time the child gets to kindergarten age, they are able to keep up with their peers.
And so it's really important for the development of the child, as you said, and it's difficult to detect. Why is it so difficult to detect? Won't the baby respond to sounds or not?
So hearing loss can be really tricky. There are different degrees of hearing loss. So for example, if the child had a mild hearing loss, they may be responding to louder sounds. So you wouldn't be able to detect that they have hearing loss. Also, babies, when they're very young, they don't do very much. They do a lot of eating and sleeping. So they can respond to pretty loud sounds, but even a child with a hearing loss might be able to hear a door slamming, but might not be able to detect all of the pitches that are important for speech.
Is this done really while the baby is still in the hospital after delivery, or is this done a month later in the pediatric office? When is this done?
So typically it's done at the birthing facility. So if a baby is born at the hospital, then usually a newborn hearing screening is done. If you were born outside of the hospital, or if you have a home birth, then sometimes the screening is done at an audiologist's office or maybe at a community health center. But most of the time it is done after birth at the hospital. So a lot of families actually don't even realize that their child's screening had been tested in the hospital.
And there's a 1-3-6 rule. What's the 1-3-6 rule?
Yes. So the Joint Committee of Infant Hearing gave us this great guidelines of 1-3-6, which every parent and every physician should know. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. So we try at ASHA to do our best to educate. So the 1-3-6 is a child get their hearing screening by 1 month of age. We really want the screening to be done as soon as possible, but 1 month of age would be the latest of when it should happen. 3 would be at 3 months. If the child fails their newborn screen, we want them to have an evaluation by an audiologist and a diagnosis by 3 months of age. And by 6 months of age, we want them enrolled in early intervention.
One of the real advances, as I understand it, in pediatric hearing is cochlear implants. Is that a common need or thing that is done? And what else is done when you say intervention?
So yes, cochlear implants have made great advances. Not every child will be a candidate for a cochlear implant. So when the child sees the audiologist, hopefully before 3 months of age, the audiologist tests hearing levels in both ears. And those hearing levels would be able to tell the audiologist, and the audiologist would work with the parent to understand what type of amplification they would qualify for. So they might qualify for a hearing aid, or if their hearing loss is more severe, they may qualify for a cochlear implant. And as for intervention, the intervention doesn't just stop with putting devices on the child. Early intervention, it can include speech therapy, or if the child needs occupational therapy too, that might be part of what the child receives. But every child is different. But we want to make sure that child is enrolled in early intervention, not just fit with the devices alone.
Talk to us a little bit about, is there a period where hearing can fall off after birth as well? And isn't that one of the problems, as I remember, with not getting vaccinated?
Hearing loss can occur at any time in our lifetime. So even if the child passes a newborn hearing screen, it doesn't mean that they will not have hearing loss for the rest of childhood. So hearing loss can happen at any time. So it's really important for parents, if they have any concerns for the child's hearing, even if they pass their newborn hearing screen, that they go ahead and tell their pediatrician or their child's primary care provider and have them refer them to an audiologist for a test.
Tell me a little bit about what the test entails as they get older. In other words, when they're young, what's the test? And don't a number of people with the measles or one of those childhood diseases develop hearing loss?
Yes. So I need to start with your question about measles. So measles definitely can cause hearing loss. So if a child is diagnosed with measles, we definitely want to be watching their hearing. For the newborn screen, there are two types of tests. There's an automated ABR and an OAE. And both these tests are painless and they're done in a matter of minutes. So for both tests, there is a probe that's put in the child's ear where sound is presented. And then there are measurements that are being done. The automated ABR, there could be some electrodes on the forehead and behind the ears. And that is just measuring the response. For the newborn hearing screening, it's really a pass or fail test. So That's what's done at the hospital, usually. If the baby does not pass that test, then they're referred to an audiologist for a more comprehensive evaluation. And during that time, the audiologist will look inside their ears to see if there's any wax that's blocking. They're going to do a tympanogram, which measures how well the eardrum is moving to see if we have any middle ear fluid in the mix. And then they're going to do the ABR, where they put the electrodes again on the forehead, behind the ears, and then they're measuring the brainwaves response to sound. As the child gets older, the test changes. So for the ABR, we really want it for when the kiddos are really young and are able to sleep naturally. When they get older, the audiologist modifies the test. So for example, when they're 6 months of age, we do something called visual reinforcement audiometry, where we train them to look for a sound, and then they're rewarded with a toy. And then when they get older, even older, we do play audiometry. And then when they grow even older and they're able to raise their hand, then that's the type of test. So really, depending on the child's age, as well as their physical ability, the audiologist decides which test is best.
And as they get older, what are the treatments? Let's just say someone gets measles and loses some degree of hearing. What are the interventions that can be done?
So the first thing that would be done is that comprehensive evaluation by the audiologist, and then you would be able to tell what type of hearing loss they have. And depending on what type of hearing loss and the severity, then a hearing aid or a cochlear implant might be options for that child.
And I know you're a pediatric specialist, but do you get involved in hearing for us old people?
Yes, definitely. So one of my jobs, actually, before I started working at ASHA, was over at GW, where I saw mostly adults. So definitely at any age, if there are any concerns, it's a good idea to come in and get a baseline.
And how good are the over-the-counter hearing aids? It used to be that hearing aids were very expensive for people, and so a huge percentage of people went without them. Now I understand they're, in fact, a fraction of the cost at some places. Is that true? And how good are they?
Yeah, so we were actually very excited at ASHA when over-the-counter hearing aids came into the market, because like you mentioned, some of the more typical prescription hearing aids, they can be very expensive. And the technology for over-the-counter hearing aids has gotten very good. What I will say is that you want to make sure the hearing loss that you have qualifies for an over-the-counter hearing aid. So the over-the-counter hearing aid is really more for mild to moderate hearing loss. So if you have something beyond that, the over-the-counter hearing aid might not be best for you. But I always say that if it's something that someone is willing to try, then it's a good way in. And if you have more needs, then an audiologist might be able to help you with a different type of hearing aid.
Any last comments before I have to say that our sponsors are lifesfirstnaturals.com and foryoungevity.com? Go to both of those websites, lifesfirstnaturals.com, to see the double-blind randomized controlled trials. I don't think for hearing, but for other things with Truebiotics, the great probiotic, and for bovine colostrum and dye rescue, especially dye rescue for if you're starting or increasing the dose of a GLP-1, such as Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, or Zepbound, and for Youngevity to sign up for the free newsletter that can help tell you about both our great guests, such as Dr. Zappi, as well as much more information about living younger, longer. Dr. Zappi, any last words?
So I just wanted to leave the listeners with two things. So one is that hearing care should be on your healthcare checklist. So whether you have concerns about your child's hearing, maybe your hearing, a parent or grandparent's hearing, going ahead and getting an evaluation with an audiologist to get a good baseline never hurts. And lastly, we didn't talk about this part too much, but hearing protection. So hearing preservation is really so important at any age. So I would really love our audience to think about having hearing protection be part of their routine. So for younger infants and toddlers, that over-the-ear muffs is a great idea for hearing protection. And then for adults, the foam roll-up earplugs or some musician earplugs that you can get over the counter is a great investment. Put it in your bag or in your car for whenever you need it.
Thanks very much. That's a great idea. I carry ear protection actually when I go on airplanes because the airplanes are awful loud, at least I find when they especially are first starting. So thanks very much. I may sit too close to the wings too many times, I think, where that those loud noises emanate from. Thank you, Dr. Zappi. Thank you, Brad, for great engineering. We'll be back with this show and maybe with AJ as our engineer next week. This has been 1258B, where we have great guests. Go to the A side too to learn the medical news of the week and what it means to you. And it's really very interesting this week, the stuff on physical activity you'll see this week. Thanks again, and we hope you're back next week. We will be. See you then on the radio.